So thanks again for the kind invitation and for everyone to for attending. So I will talk about correlations and topology, at least some of the aspects of these important topics in the magic angle twisted bilayer graphene. This work was done at the Mag Lab and Florida State. I've been very fortunate to collaborate with Jian Kang, who was a postdoc at the Mag Lab and is now on a faculty at Suzhou University in China. And this talk is largely based on these publications. So imagine you take two sheets of monolayer graphene, twist one relative to the other, and then place them on top of each other. There will be a new Moiré pattern that forms, which is approximately periodic. And the smaller the twist angle, the longer will be the period. Now, this new superpotential will Bragg scatter the Dirac electrons in each of the graphene layers and form mini bands. So to get an intuition of what to expect, let's consider first the two graphene layers decoupled. Then the large Brillouin zone on the bottom, say, is the large blue hexagon here, will be twisted relative to the red Brillouin zone of the top layer. The lower energy excitations live near the Dirac points, denoted here by K1 and K2. And they will also be displaced relative to each other. Now, consider plotting the dispersion along the path that joins them, which is sketched over here on the right. We will get the blue and the red lines intersecting at some energy, which I'm trying to point to with my mouse. And this energy is set by half the displacement of the Dirac points times the Fermi velocity. Now, if we turn on the interlayer coupling, the crossing will turn into an avoided crossing. And the stronger is the interlayer tunneling, the stronger is the level of repulsion. And we have therefore two energy scales here, one set by the level crossing, VF times half the displacement between the Dirac points. And then another one set by the interlayer coupling, which sets the level of repulsion. And when they are comparable, we may expect that the resulting miniband will get narrow. The little movie on the left, which I will show in just a second, is a slightly more sophisticated version of this based on a continuum model of Bississer and McDonald, which is periodic for each value of the twist angle. It's the continuum low energy model, and which allows us to talk about the bands. So as the angle gets smaller, the period gets larger in real space and the Brillouin zone shrinks. So in this movie, I will keep the size of the Brillouin zone fixed for better comparison. So we will start at a relatively large angle of 3 degrees when the level repulsion effect is perturbative and the band is still quite wide. And then we will progressively decrease this angle. And as we will see at around 1.1 degrees, the movie should be running now, the band gets rather flat. And then it continues broadening after that when the angle decreases past about 1.1. So here's the plot from the famous paper from Pablo Carrillo Herrero's group, where they tune the angle to about 1.1 degrees and observed that as they fill or empty this narrow band, the system turns insulating, whereby band theory, one would expect it to be metallic, so it should not be insulating in this orange and green ribbon filling. And then there's a superconductivity nearby this insulating state. Just for orientation, this -4 means the band is empty, the +4 means the band is completely full. And as we will see, this band takes 8 electrons per unit cell to fill up. This was quickly reproduced and extended by Corey Dean and Andrea Young's collaboration. They not only saw insulation at 2 particles and 2 holes per unit cell, so that's over here and over here, So two particles and two holes relative to the neutrality point, but also at three electrons, so odd integer filling. Moreover, they tune the angle away from the magic. So this particular plot, as you see, is at 1.27 degrees, where the band is not flat under ambient pressure. But when they applied external pressure, the interlayer coupling increased and the level of repulsion got stronger, and that flattened the band. And so there is a fine-tuned value of the pressure for which the correlated phenomena appeared, even when they did not at ambient pressure. And they also saw superconductivity. Moreover, the data from Dmitry Efetov's group showed the correlated insulators almost at all integer fillings and superconductivity in between. So let's consider the energy scales involved. The Moret superlattice band gap that separates the narrow bands from the remote bands. So that's this delta over here is approximately 30 to 40 MeV based on the transport activation. And although this may be an underestimate, theoretically, the bandwidth is about 10 MeV, maybe less, depending on how much strain there is. In the STM, it seems that it's maybe about 20 MeV. And then finally, the typical scale of the Coulomb interaction, so two charges separated by a Moret period with the dielectric constant of the encapsulated boronitride, is about 25 MeV. And so it seems that we are in an intermediate coupling regime, and it's perhaps the hardest place to be in theoretical physics. Nevertheless, I think the experiments give us some helpful hints. So as we saw, the insulation occurs at some simple commensurate fillings of the four bands. In my opinion, this is difficult to reconcile with the notion that the insulation is due to some Fermi surface nesting or the Van Hoff singularities, because such band structure features generically occur at incommensurate fillings. And we also saw that fine-tuning the twist angle or the pressure suggests that the effective Coulomb interaction dominates the effective kinetic energy. And so even if the, so that's this point. And so even if the physical system is ultimately in an intermediate coupling regime, a strong coupling approach may be more successful in capturing the nature of the correlated phases. And so in this approach, we would solve the interaction only Hamiltonian projected onto the narrow bands, and then the kinetic energy would be treated as a perturbation. Okay, so the outline of this talk, perhaps a bit ambitious, is to discuss the topology of the narrow bands and its consequences. And I will discuss three different basis choices. The first would be a construction of 2D localized Vanier states, then the 1D localized Vanier states, so-called hybrid Vanier states, and then finally the extended in all directions smooth gauge block states. And I will discuss results for all of these different choices of bases. I will say something about our recent work that tries to connect the short distance physics of the Bissitzer-McDonald model to the narrow bands via two-stage renormalization group. And then I will hopefully get to discuss the effects of the residual Coulomb interactions within the narrow bands analyzed in different bases. So in the 2D Vanier bases, we'll see that the lattice Hamiltonian has a new form and that the usual anti-ferromagnetic super exchange fails and turns ferromagnetic with approximate spin valley SU4 symmetry. I also discuss the appearance of quantum anomalous Hall state within this lattice model, as was recently observed by DMRG calculations. And then I will talk about the 1D hybrid Vanier basis, discuss results of our DMRG calculations on this and how it compares with the subsequent DMRG of others. There will be discussion of variational trial states, at least for the spinless one-valley model, And we'll see a competition between the churn insulator pneumatic and a period two stripe, which is C2T symmetric. And then finally, to understand the spectrum of the C2T symmetric stripe phase, we will study the behavior of the Dirac nodes in this C2T symmetric setup. And we'll see that there's some rather beautiful topology described by non-abelian Dirac node braiding. Okay, so let's see. So at least we found it helpful to start with a concrete lattice model at a commensurate twist angle. So imagine these two layers, red and blue, they are initially perfectly aligned, and then we rotate one relative to the other. So there are two different ways to reach the end of the unit cell. We can get there along these blue arrows or along these red arrows, okay? And that's for a commensurate twist angle. Now, that means that there is an equation that must hold for some integer m and n. And for the magic angle, the closest such pair of integers is 30 and 31. Now, this particular structure has a point group symmetry, D3, that's generated by this threefold rotation about the axis perpendicular to the plane. And as well as another twofold axis that is within the plane, which is perpendicular to the threefold axis here, okay? I'd like to point out that this particular structure, strictly speaking, does not have another twofold axis within the plane, which we call C2 double prime, and that's perpendicular to both the C3 axis and the C2 prime axis. And because our system does have time inversal symmetry, and because the product of the C2 prime and C2 double prime is the out of plane C2, this structure, strictly speaking, does not have C2T symmetry. However, as we make the twist angle smaller, the C2 double prime and therefore C2T emerge at long distances. Now, the tight binding model which we used was described in this paper by Moon and Koshino, and the hopping parameters were fitted to DFT at larger twist angles where the DFT can be done. And then once they have been calibrated and checked, the twist angle has been decreased where now we can use this tight binding model. All right, now this was done in the spring of 2018. What we found is that if we chose the twist angle to be 1.1, then without any relaxation, which we're not thinking about at the time, there is no band gap between the narrow bands and the remote bands. But experimentally, we knew that it is an insulator both when the narrow bands are emptied and when they are filled. And so then we found a nearby twist angle, 1.3, so different set of integers, where in fact the band structure looked correct. And so we used this as the Hilbert space of interest for the strong coupling physics. As we will see, this will not play an important role, this change in the angle. But since then, we know that if we were to add the lattice relaxation and in fact went to the magic angle of 1.1, then we would still find that these bands are separated. And in fact, there will be no difference. All right. We also noticed that at the gamma point, so there are four bands here because the lattice model includes both valleys. This is per spin. At the gamma point, we noticed that there was a double degeneracy, and we understood the representation associated with that double degeneracy. But at the, and this is true for both of these points, but at the K point, we found that at the K point, we found that there was one doublet, and then there was and there were two singlets. So there was a splitting at the K point. very, very small splitting. So the representation at the gamma point was E, or two times E, because one for the upper, one for the lower. And the representation at the K points, there was one E and then A2 and A1. And it turns out that even though the local density of states is peaked at the triangular moray sites, and this comes out both the calculation and is observed in STM, it would seem that there's a natural place to place the centers of the Vanier states. It turns out that the fact that the representations are different at the gamma and K prohibits this choice. And in fact, the solution is to place the Vanier centers on the dual lattice of this moray triangle lattice, which is the honeycomb lattice. And in this honeycomb lattice, we would place two centers of the Vanier states at this red spot, and the other two of them at this blue spot. So W1 and 2 would be at the red, centered at the red spot, and W3 and 4 on the blue spot. So just for orientation here, the origin here is the so-called AA stacking, which is where we have peaks in the local density of states. But as you see, the centers are chosen at the AB and BA. So just simply from the picture on the left, you can already suspect what the Vanier states are going to look like. We're going to need to somehow produce peaks in the local density of states at the AA sites, despite the centers being at the AB sites. And since we are trying to keep all the lattice symmetries that I discussed, these Vanier states necessarily will have to have a three-peak structure. So going back to the symmetries, once we have the Vanier state that here I'm going to call W1 for now, it turns out to be complex, and it will transform under C3 by acquiring a phase, and of course being translated. The second Vanier state centered on the same site is related to it by complex conjugation. So that's how time reversal symmetry is implemented. And then this C2 prime symmetry, which is the remaining generator, gets us to W3, and time reversal then relates W3 to W4. Okay, I don't want to go too much through the details of the actual construction. It is described in this work by Marzari and Vanderbilt, and also by the review paper. The basic idea is to come up with a good mixture of the block states, which is smooth in momentum space, such that the Vanier states constructed from that mixture upon Fourier transform give well-localized Vanier states. Now, the important step in this procedure is to construct a trial Vanier function, which is then projected onto the Hilbert space of the narrow bands. There's this overlap matrix AJI, and one has to make sure that none of its singular values vanish. If they do, there is an obstruction. One eventually just takes the unitary part of this of this overlap matrix. So just to show you that there is indeed no obstruction to building exponentially localized Vanier states, this plots the ratio of the maximum to minimum singular value. And you see it stays finite throughout the entire Brillouin zone. The Vanier states are then, for the first one, the absolute value of the Vanier state squared is shown here, resolved to the top layer on the A sublattice, bottom layer on the A sublattice, top layer, B sublattice, bottom layer, B sublattice. And as suspected, it has this three peak structure. Okay, so how well does this reproduce the kinetic energy? It depends on how far you're willing to include the hopping, but this is not a fitting. This is taking the microscopically constructed Vanier basis, finding the expectation value or the matrix elements of the kinetic energy within that, that gives us the hopping model. I think this is, I forgot exactly how far we hop. It's not just nearest neighbor, obviously. We have to hop quite far, but clearly you can reproduce the band structure. So far there is no mention of obstruction or topology of these bands, but let's say that we would like to implement not just the exact symmetries of this D3 structure, but we would also like to implement the emergent symmetries, such as the C2T and the valley conservation. if we go back to our Bloch states, they are approximately valley polarized, and it's not difficult to actually make them valley polarized, even on a tie binding lattice. Now, within each one of this valley, one can show that the Bloch states at the gamma point have opposite parity under the C2 double prime, this emergent symmetry. And it turns out that that spoils the local implementation of the C2 double prime. In other words, what this means is that if you act with C2 double prime on any one of these Vanier states, you will obtain a linear combination, not just of the on-site Vanier state or the site that's related by C2 double prime, but of some linear combination of Vanier states from nearby. And so that's the sense in which this model is obstructed. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, so this is the proof for this. And let me not bore you with the details. The long story short is that if we assume that any one of these starting Vanier states is even under C2 double prime, then all of the other ones will have to be even. And as a result, our Bloch states will not be able to have opposite parity at the gamma point for the upper and lower doublet. All right. So there is an obstruction. The obstruction is not to producing exponentially localized Vanier states, but it is to producing exponentially localized Vanier states if we at the same time would like to have a simple action of C2T as well as U1 valley symmetries. So if we want to have on-site representation of these symmetries. Okay. So it turns out that an additional important point is that one also has to include translation. And as was emphasized by Andrei Brnovich's group, also the approximate particle Hall symmetry. Incidentally, the effective continuum model of Bissell and MacDonald, which I mentioned before, has all the emergent symmetries as exact. And apart from the Fermi velocity and the angle, which gives the Moret period, it contains two other parameters, W0 here, which parametrizes the tunneling through the AA region, and also W1, which parametrizes the tunneling through the AB region. So now let's switch gears a little bit and start considering the correlation effects. Projecting the Coulomb interaction onto the narrow bands should be thought of as a shortcut to integrating out the remote bands in the presence of the Coulomb interaction. And then determining the residual interaction within the narrow bands. It turns out that this can be done by splitting the energy window into three different parts. The first part, which we call the stage one, is a region where the Moret potentials W0 and W1 are still perturbative. And at the same time, the Coulomb interaction is perturbative. Now, so then what we do is we eliminate progressively the UV cutoff as we approach the narrow bands near the neutrality point. And in this region, it turns out that one can write continuum flow equations. So in this particular case, what we find, this is not new, that the Fermi velocity grows under renormalization due to the Coulomb interaction. But interestingly, we find that the W0 parameter, which is relevant by power counting, but if we absorb this growth, this relevant growth, in fact, will not renormalize beyond this by Coulomb interaction. On the other hand, the W1 parameter, which is the tunneling through the AB region, does grow under RG. And it grows in precisely such a way as to compensate the growth of VF. That would explain why the magic angle is independent of whether the Coulomb interaction is screened by the substrate or it isn't. On the other hand, the ratio of W0 to W1 shrinks under the RG because W1 will grow under the RG. So that's the first stage of the RG, sketched here with this dense set of bands. Then, once the Moret tunneling parameters become important, and we can't quite treat them within perturbative RG, we switch to numerically integrating out the remote bands one by one, a la Wilsonian RG. And at the same time, we then scale the interaction and the self-energy. And so just to show you that the transition between these two RG stages is smooth, on the left, I show a different choice of the cutoff for the second stage of the RG. And you see that the band structure, in fact, depends on the choice of the UV cutoff. On the other hand, when you appropriately rescale the parameters of the BM model, then the band structure beautifully collapses. And this demonstrates that we have a control over where to stop the first stage of the RG and pick up the second stage of the RG. So in fact, you can change this transition region. As long as the first stage of RG is under control, the second stage of RG will smoothly pick it up. And then we renormalize, eliminate band by band until we reach the narrow bands. And then within the narrow bands, we switch the priority of the Coulomb interaction to the kinetic energy and simply solve the strong coupling problem, treating the kinetic energy as a perturbation. Okay, so another thing that we should keep in mind is that the physical system is not only encapsulated in the hexagonal boronitride, but there are also metallic layers nearby. And because of these metallic layers sketched here, there will be a series of image charges. And in this particular situation, we would get an interaction that is actually exponentially screened past the separation to the screening layer. Now, so one thing that I would like to set up is some false expectations for this strong coupling approach. So usually we are taught is, let's say we have a problem described by kinetic energy K and the, let's say, Hubbard interaction U, and say we are dealing with spin a half fermions on a square lattice, we would start in strong coupling by neglecting the kinetic energy. We would solve the interaction only problem. And let's say at half filling, we would place one particle per unit, per site, per unit cell in this case, with the spin being a free degree of freedom. And then we would perturbatively turn on the kinetic energy, and the super exchange would give us a nail antiferromagnet. And so I want to emphasize that this is not what happens in the strong coupling limit for the magic angle twisted by Lyapunov. Was there a question? Okay. So to see that this problem is more interesting, know that if we focus on the overlap integral of two Vanier states through this central hexagon, this will show up in the Coulomb matrix elements, then the Vanier centers, which are at different sites, let's say on this nearest neighbor bond, will overlap through this central hexagon. And in fact, they will have a sizable overlap. This would not be true if the narrow bands were smoothly connected to the atomic limit, if they were not, if there was in some sense of topology in them. And of course, one should worry about further overlaps like this one, this one, this one, and this one. So the projected Coulomb interaction will take a more complicated form than just a Coulomb term, and some of these terms are kept here. It can be written in this form of a square of an operator, where within this operator, we have two types of terms. The N of R simply counts the total charge on the six sites that surround the center of the hexagon. And then this T operator hops the electrons with a staggered sign of the hopping as we go along this hexagon. There's a parameter alpha one, which is of order one in this particular case. It's less than one, but not significantly less than one. And so this is our operator O. Now notice that these operators do not commute for centers for nearest neighbor centers, R and R prime. And so therefore, this type of interaction still in strong coupling will induce correlations among sites. Okay. And the fact that this parameter alpha one is not small, but it's of order one, is in fact direct consequence. I'm not explaining this exactly, but one can show that this is a direct consequence of the fact that the C2 double prime symmetry is obstructed. So this changes the physics of the strong coupling. And in particular, it leads to ferromagnetic ground states, which have an approximate SU4 spin valley symmetry. So in particular, we can find a state which is the ground state of this Hamiltonian simply by filling every one of these dual sites with a Vanian state with from the same valley and same spin. But because of this approximate spin valley symmetry, we can rotate such states through a global SU4 rotation and find that there are other states, some of which are favored by the kinetic energy, which are intervalley coherent states. And a similar, although not exactly same set of states, were also discussed by Ashwin Vishwanath and Mike Zalatel's group, as well as by Andre Bernevix in this more recent TBG series. We also notice that if we go to odd filling, we could solve this Hamiltonian for small alpha one. Now, as I said, alpha one is not quite small, but this is all we could do analytically. And we found that at least for small alpha one, it favors a period two stripe. Now, this is a kind of a funny stripe because it's a stripe in the position of the centers of these Vanier states. Remember, the charge is still sitting mostly in the centers of the hexagons. So as far as charge is concerned, it's largely homogeneous. And the reason why such a state would be favored is because this type of configuration first maximizes the Coulomb term, the direct Coulomb piece. So we keep one charge per center of the plaquette. Each of these red dots would donate a third. But then at the same time, there are many configurations which do this, but at the same time, we also block, subject to this constraint, the largest number of hoppings possible, which turns out to be two. So this is why we proposed that, at least within this Hamiltonian, such period two stripe states should be competitive energetically. The recent DMRG calculation done by Whaley's group shows that if you now take this model and then you increase the value of alpha one, so you promote this sort of assisted hopping and pair hopping terms within this Hamiltonian, that in fact there is a transition into a quantum anomalous Hall state. Okay. So as far as these 2D exponentially localized Vanier states are concerned, there are, in my opinion, certain advantages, namely that it is easier to think about the interactions directly in real space, and that this generalized ferromagnetism comes out rather naturally. And also some of these insulating phases like a period two stripe can be more intuitively understood. There are disadvantages, and the disadvantages are that the C2T symmetry, which is obstructed here, and in this particular case also C2 double prime, are encoded non-locally. And so one has to do additional work if one wants to stick with the 2D exponential localized Vanier states to determine whether the many-body state respects or breaks these symmetries. The one way to proceed is then to switch the basis once one has an intuition and to look for phases inspired by this type of analysis using a hybrid Vanier basis. So these are Vanya states similar to Landau levels in Landau gauge. They're exponentially localized in one direction, but they are extended in the other direction. And there is no obstruction to imposing symmetries in a simple way onto such hybrid Vanier states. All right. So in order to gain clear understanding of the effects of the Coulomb interaction and this U1 and C2T symmetries on the low energy states, we now going to switch to this hybrid Vanier basis, which, as I said, is localized in one direction and extended in the other. And there are additional advantages to this basis in that the topology of the narrow bands is more transparent. And also one can study some of the broken translation symmetry states. The disadvantage is that the Coulomb interaction is rather complicated in this basis, and it's hard to get an intuition for what it wants to do. So to do this, we now work within this continuum model of Bississa and McDonald that I've already mentioned, and use the technique from this paper where we diagonalize the projected position operator where this delta Q is in this direction. All right, so this is how one does this. And I'm, for illustration, I'm showing here some of these Vanier states. They will now have a continuous label, just like Landau levels in the Landau gauge. There is a quantum number K that kind of describes how fast it winds, how fast the wave function winds in the x direction, and also determines where the Gaussian is centered. And so this is shown over here, again, split for the top A, top B, bottom A, and bottom B for two different values of this parameter K. So the one on the right, as you can see, has a rather sort of complex structure, but it's mostly peaked along these triangular sites over here. But now as you start changing this good quantum number K and you start sliding these Vanier states to the right, you see that now they pick up an additional weight on the other row. And this is how the expectation value of the position, so the polarization operator, depends and evolves with K, the good quantum number. It's shown in more detail over here. So this is the expectation value of the position operator in this basis. And because per spin per valley, we have two bands, there will be two eigenvalues of this operator. And as you can see, one of them winds to the left and the other one winds to the right. So the red one behaves like a churn plus, let's say, and the blue as a churn minus. There is a dimensionless parameter in the Bississa and McDonald model, which is the ratio of the AA tunneling, that's W0, to AB tunneling, that's W1. And we change this parameter from 0 to about 0.85. For value W0 over W1 equal to 1, remember, we would actually close the gap to the remote bands within the BM model at the magic angle. Now you see each one of these hybrid Vanier states nicely winds by one, but the shape of these so-called Wilson loop eigen values changes. And we get something that's a lot flatter at these more realistic values of W0 over W1 than we would get in the so-called chiral limit. And as we will see, this has repercussions for the type of strong coupling phases one finds within this narrow band. Okay, so this is yet another quantity which we can track under this numerical RG in the second stage. So if we start at some UV scale with the ratio 0.83, which is more or less what's been measured as a ratio of the AA to AB regions within STM. It gives us this type of shape of this Wilson loop, the blue. But then as we keep renormalizing, then under RG, we see that these Wilson loops steepen. And eventually, before we reach the narrow band, we find that they are not too dissimilar from the chiral limit. So in fact, we are approaching the chiral limit within RG. Okay, I don't want to bore you with this, except that we can build smooth block states from these hybrid Vanier states as well, project the kinetic energy onto it. This is a basis which is smooth in K-space. It preserves C2T, but it is not periodic in K. And so it is in this basis that you can see explicitly that the winding number of the two Dirac cones in the kinetic energy is actually the same, as was pointed out by Ashwin and Sentil's groups early on. Okay, so now going back to the results of our DMRG, we found that if we take a spinless one-valley model, project the Coulomb interaction onto the hybrid Vanier basis, and then ask what is the nature of the ground state, we found that in the chiral limit, so this is W0 over W1 equal to zero, the state is a quantum anomalous Hall state, it's a churn one state, which is gapped, and therefore it is stable with respect to a small ratio of W0 over W1. In fact, we can prove that it is an exact ground state in the chiral limit in this model. So it has to persist up to a finite value of this W0 over W1. And we find that interestingly, for the value of the ratio which is close to realistic, there is a phase transition where the C2T symmetry is restored and where we either break rotation or perhaps also translation symmetry. We couldn't quite converge on the exact nature of the ground state over here. There are certain features which we definitely converged on in this DMRG, such as that the C2T has been restored and some additional rather non-trivial technical features, but we couldn't quite tell whether it's purely broken rotational symmetry or whether it also is breaking translation. Now, one thing that this DMRG gave us is that the ground states are remarkably close to being product states. So in particular, if you look at the occupation of each of these hybrid Vanier orbitals, we find that it is mostly singly occupied with a very small chance of no occupancy and very small chance of double occupancy. In addition to that, we found that the equal time correlation function for different orbitals is very strongly peaked when K and K prime, as well as the Vanier centers, these 1D Vanier centers are equal. And this is true whether we look at the correlations among the same churn numbers or for different churn numbers. So this led us to write down a trial state in this hybrid Vanier state, Vanier basis, which would satisfy these properties. It's simply a product state where the UK and VK are also a function of position N, the center of the hybrid Vanier basis, and there are variational parameters. And then this allows us to optimize such a wave function for larger system sizes than what we could do within DMRG. And what we find is that for the same size of the cylinder as in the DMRG, in or close to the chiral limit, we indeed find that the quantum anomalous Hall state, which is rather easy to write down in this basis, you just simply prefer churn plus versus churn minus hybrid Vanier basis, has much better energy. It's clearly separated from a nematic state or a stripe state. But as we increase the ratio W0 to W1, we indeed find a transition. They're still nearly degenerate, But in this particular case, the stripe state, which is C2T symmetric, would end up being the ground state. We can also increase the width of the cylinder in this particular case. We find the same thing, at least for a smaller value of W0 to W1, so closer to the chiral limit. The quantum anomalous hole is the ground state, clearly separated from the pneumatic and the stripe. The x-axis here is now turning back on the kinetic energy. And then when we go to the more realistic value of this ratio, again, we find that they are nearly degenerate. Now, for this particular width, the quantum anomalous hole actually outcompetes by a little bit the gapped stripe state. But in any case, they become nearly degenerate. What about their excitation spectrum? As I mentioned, the quantum anomalous hole has a gapped single particle excitation spectrum. Such a state has been observed in the magic angle twisted bilayer graphene samples aligned with boronitride, and perhaps very recently also without the alignment, which, you know, this hexagonal boronitride likely further stabilizes such a state, which is highly competitive even without the alignment. The excitation, so these plots here show the excitation spectrum for the C2T pneumatic that's on the left and the C2T stripe state. So the pneumatic state is gapless with the minimum near the gamma point. In the absence of kinetic energy, we couldn't quite tell whether there's a single there's a single quadratic band touching with the winding number 2 at the gamma point, or whether there are two Dirac cones very close together. But you see, there's a rather dramatic effect that the interactions caused in the pneumatic, namely the Dirac cones used to be at KAK prime, but the interactions make them move to the center of the Brillouin zone. Now, interestingly, this C2T stripe state is gapped despite breaking, despite preserving the C2T and U1 valley symmetries. So as I said, this is gapless, this is gapped. Now, recall that the Dirac nodes have an equal winding number. So the question is, how does one end up with a gap state like in the period two stripe state without breaking C2T and U1 valley? And in fact, once the Moray translation symmetry is broken, then these bands need to be folded and into four with period two per valley per spin. And there will be new Dirac cones which are formed between the bands which are away from the, in this particular case, the orange nodes with equal chirality. So these red ones and these blue ones. And it turns out that the relative topological charge of these nodes in this case is then path dependent, as beautifully shown in this paper by Vu, Solyanov, and Tomasz Bzduszek. And so in fact, the nodes at the Fermi level may in principle annihilate if they're able to braid around the nodes from away from the Fermi level. And this is illustrated here in this picture on the right. You see, if we try to connect, if we try to annihilate the two quote unquote equal winding number Dirac nodes along this dashed path, it would be, let's say, impossible, while along this solid path, they will actually change their winding number. And by the time they meet, they're actually opposite and they can annihilate and gap the spectrum. That's because the topological charge of any one of these nodes actually depends on how they're braided around the nodes which appear elsewhere in the spectrum further up. I'm showing this evolution here. We start this parameter epsilon is set to zero in this toy model. And for this value, particle hole symmetry is preserved. And in fact, the remote bands nodes are sort of occluded. They're sitting on top of each other. You cannot quite see the red is sitting below the blue here. And in fact, in this case, there are no paths along which the equal winding number nodes can meet and annihilate. However, as we start changing this parameter, now the blue and the red separate, and there are now paths along which this can happen. And as we increase the value of this parameter, you see the orange nodes eventually move closer together, annihilate and gap out the spectrum. There's a nice way to think about this through world lines. The orange nodes here correspond to this orange ring. You see the direction of the winding number is illustrated by these arrows. And every time one of these loops goes underneath a world line from the proximate node from the proximate band, it will change the orientation. And in fact, that's how you can end up at some value of the parameter with no orange ring, just let's say the red nodes, which are no longer at the Fermi level and end up with a gap spectrum. So that's why it is possible to obtain a gap phase simply by breaking translation symmetry without violating C2T or U1 valley symmetries. Now, this picture of the quantum anomalous Hall state undergoing a transition into a state which does not break C2T symmetry was subsequently confirmed by a more accurate DMRG algorithm from Mike Zolotow's group. In fact, they find the transition happens at the same value of W0 over W1 in this case. And they're able to resolve, in the presence of kinetic energy, they're able to resolve the small energy difference between the two C2T preserving states, and found that the semi-metallic, the pneumatic state, is in fact slightly favored over the other phase. But I'd just like to point out that the difference between the energetic difference as they obtained between these phases is indeed rather small. So phenomenologically, I think that the C2T preserving period two gap strike is a good candidate for insulating phases at odd integer, which do not show quantum anomalous Hall state. Very recent experiment from Amir Jacobi and Pablo Harilo Herrero's collaboration have indeed seen indications of this period two stripe state in samples which seem to be showing some degree of hexagonal boron nitride alignment. Indeed, they are finding that there are Chern number even states at odd filling, as well as Chern number odd states at even filling, and explain it using this notion of translation symmetry breaking by doubling the period. Okay, so the final part will then be a discussion of single particle or in fact, charge neutral excitations on top of some of these ground states. And since we have a situation where the density operator, the projected density operator annihilates our ground state, we can then consider an excited state, which is built by acting with some operator X on the ground state, simply by finding the operator eigenvalue that results from this double commutator. This is at charge neutrality point. So all we have to do now is just, there shouldn't be any omega on the left, this should be just operator eigen equation. For one particle, this is relatively easy to do. I'm showing the result after the renormalization. We see that indeed the spectrum at the neutrality point for some of these insulating states has a minimum at the gamma point. Now, we can also use this to compute charge neutral or collective modes in the strong coupling. And this is done here. We find, interestingly, that in addition to the Goldstone bosons, which are ferromagnetic and therefore quadratic here, there's also a softening of an additional pseudo Goldstone boson. And that is associated with the decrease under RG of this ratio W0 to W1. And that brings us closer to a higher symmetry, U4 cross U4, in which case this collective mode would be perfectly soft. Now, in addition to these modes, there are also additional modes which are the pneumatic collective modes, which they never become gapless, at least in this particular for this particular ground state, but they're clearly soft and they're within the gap to the continuum, which is marked by the red lines over here. Okay, so finally, the justification for the strong coupling approach within the narrow bands is shown here. I'm showing the charge gap as computed using this exact calculation for the spectrum of a charge neutral excitations, as well as the super exchange due to the residual interactions. And as we see at the magic angle, the super exchange is extremely small compared to this charge gap. And so this justifies the strong coupling approach for the narrow bands. Okay, I managed to finish, I think, more or less on time. So here's a summary. I discussed states favored by Coulomb interactions projected onto the basis of the four narrow bands of the magic angle twisted by a layer graphene. Due to the unusual shape and symmetry of the 2D Vanier orbitals, the strong coupling problem is qualitatively different from the much studied topologically trivial narrow band, i.e. a solid in an atomic limit. The usual anti-ferromagnetic super exchange mechanism fails and turns ferromagnetic with an approximate spin valley SU4 symmetry. The results of our DMRG and variational trial states show an approximately that the ground state is approximately a product state at odd integer filling. And there is a quantum phase transition as a function of a dimensionless parameter that describes the tunneling between the AA and the AB regions. And finally, I told you about this fascinating, in my opinion, mechanism of non-abelian braiding of the Dirac nodes that allows us to open a gap without breaking C2T and U1 valley in a stripe state. Okay, so thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, thank you, Oscar. Are there any questions? Okay, Yongbek, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so I have a rather elementary question. I think you probably already explained. So you said that you start from a BM model and go through the realization group, you approach the chiral limit?
Yes.
So what's the intuition behind it? So what kind of physics is it behind such a behavior?
Okay, that's an excellent question. I don't have a good physical intuition for why it would want to decrease the AA tunneling relative to the AB tunneling. Mathematically, I can see where this comes from, but I don't have a good physical intuition for why it would want to do this. In fact, it came a little bit as a surprise. In retrospect, it kind of had to happen, but mathematically, it comes from the fact that for the logarithm, these are all logarithmic renormalizations, just like the renormalization of the Fermi velocity. For the logarithm, you need to connect states which are of opposite helicity. And W0 perturbation is an identity. So it's unable to flip the helicity. On the other hand, W1 is not. It's a Pauli matrix sigma 1 or sigma 2, and it can flip the helicity. So, but beyond this, I don't have a good physical intuition for why this should happen.
Okay, so, Asa? Sorry.
But in the end, so it somehow means that the quantum anomalous Hall state is more robust than you may expect, you may naively expect, or
right.
Should I interpret this way?
Right, that's right. Because the closer you come to the chiral limit, the more likely. So if you're away from the chiral limit, then the projected Coulomb interaction has a U4 symmetry. That U4 symmetry does not contain quantum anomalous Hall in it. There are other states in it, like a valley polarized state, and then intervalley coherent states, which are part of the U4 manifold. However, if you go to the chiral limit exactly, then the symmetry is larger. It's a U4 cross U4. It has to do with the fact that in the chiral limit, the Bissett and MacDonald wave functions live entirely on one sublattice. And therefore, there's no mixing in the projected mm-hmm. density operator between them. So that enlarges the symmetry. And now quantum anomalous Hall state is a member of that enlarged symmetry. So, if you can reach the chiral limit exactly, then it would be a strong coupling ground state along with anything that can be U4 cross U4 rotated into it. If you are slightly away from it, it becomes more competitive. So another way to think about it, you saw there was a softening of this pseudo-Goldstone in the exact spectrum for the charge excitation. You need that softening to get perfect. It has to become a perfect Goldstone for it to become for the quantum anomalous Hall to be the ground state. This is for the neutrality point. If you go away from the neutrality point, then it gets a little bit more complicated. And at odd filling, it gets even more complicated because now there's a stronger competition among these states. But certainly smaller W0 over W1, even in the exact diagonalization calculations from Andrei Bernovich's group, favors churn states.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Asa, go ahead.
Hi, Oscar.
Hi.
I have a question. You're saying that the one-year states are sitting on a honeycomb, so it's a bipartite lattice. The question is, if you added electron-phonon interaction to your model, would you see a competition between the states you were talking about and just essentially a parallels or a kind of a two sublattice charge density wave? Because
I think the phonon question is still very much open. Let me see if I can can you see my screen?
Yeah.
So you see, it's a little tricky because even though the centers are on the honeycomb lattice, you see most of the charge is living in the centers of the plaquettes. So if you try to make some type of a pyral state, you're not necessarily modulating the charge in the center of the plaquette. Now, that is not to say that you shouldn't get such a state at all, because you know one way to understand the quantum anomalous Hall state within this lattice model is that you indeed induce some hopping between these sites, which become like a Haldane model, and that has a churn number. You see, so it is possible that I simply don't know yet what happens when you add phonons to this, but it is possible that it would favor maybe the nematic state. But it's not totally obvious. You know, the intuition shouldn't be that I'm just simply hopping on the honeycomb lattice because the charge is sitting kind of elsewhere.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I see her hand raised by Zhu Ze.
Go ahead. Okay, thanks for the nice talk. So I'm just curious about this SU4 ferromagnetism state. I'm wondering if those states would survive at finite temperature or they're destroyed by Merman wave now.
Well, they should be destroyed by Merman wave.
Okay. But, well, then my actual question is, the quantum anomalous Hall states actually was actually observed at finite temperature, like 7.5 Kelvin. So how to reconcile those two?
No, but right. So the quantum anomalous Hall is not a member of the SU4 manifold, as I mentioned. It's a member of a U4 cross U4 manifold if you are exactly in the chiral limit. So if you are away from the chiral limit, then there are anisotropy terms for the quantum anomalous Hall state.
So, anisotropy. Can you elaborate on that? I thought it might be.
So you don't have a continuous symmetry.
Okay.
That connects quantum anomalous Hall to the other states. If you are away from the chiral limit, there will be anisotropy terms. In that case, you have to be exactly in the chiral limit for that U4 cross U4 to be perfect, and you have to ignore the kinetic energy. So there will always be some small anisotropy terms for the quantum anomalous Hall.
Okay. So it's not part of the intervalley coherence state.
That's right. By the way, there are also anisotropies. Which will lower the SU4 symmetry. If you add kinetic energy, for example, then the SU4 will just simply go back to the original SU2 cross SU2, and the intervalley coherent state would simply only break U1, and for that you can have a finite temperature phase transition.
So
when I said the Merman-Wagner will destroy, this is in the strict strong coupling limit for just pure SU4.
Okay, I see. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Is there any other question? Okay, so if there's no further question, let's thank Oscar once again.